Today's podcast is brought to you by our partners at Genesis, who are celebrating the release of their newest model, the first ever Genesis GV80. A luxury SUV for our modern times, the GV80 showcases the perfect blend of unexpected capability and sleek design, as this car is meant to get you anywhere you want to go with ease and style. With available all-wheel drive and 375 horsepower, as well as the convenience of their complimentary Genesis service valet. Genesis is here to exceed your every expectation and then some. Be the first to experience the new era of what a modern luxury SUV should be. Visit Genesis.com to learn more about the Genesis GV80 today. Boundless by design. Hey, and welcome to Tomorrow. I'm your host, Joshua Topolsky. Today on the podcast, we discuss Batman, monster trucks, and silver linings. I don't waste 1 minute. Let's get right into it. All right, we're back.
Hello.
We're better than ever. Ryan is here, but also we have a special guest this week, Evan Rogers. The guide, there he is right there. The guides editor for inputmagazine.net. No, it's actually inputmag.com. Evan has just come off a grueling holiday gift season. And how do you feel? How do you feel about all that?
I feel great. I mean, the sort of holiday gift guide whole package, I feel like, turned out really well. I feel like we really, like, found the gifts that our audience like really wants. We had a lot of like style gifts. We had a lot of like electric transportation gifts.
Yeah.
We had a lot of like outdoor and like ultra light gifts, which made me very happy.
Yeah.
So I feel like we really did it.
We did. Our goal was to not do gift guides that were like, everybody does these gift guides. It's like gifts, holiday gifts. $25 and under. It's like, yeah, right. That's just like a really big
socks. Get socks. They're silly. Silly socks.
I think, yeah, socks. I think like a really good one, like Cheyenne McDonald, our news editor, wrote thoughtful gifts for your friend who's always in pain, which I thought is like a really cool, like you know people who are like who are sick or have pain, and it's like a really interesting angle of like just not trying to be like, we did an audio gifts one that I thought was like really good. We kind of did it by budget, but it's very specific home audio instead of just like general audio gifts. Like I thought we did one about with e-bikes and scooters, which I thought was really good. Like I like gifts. I like guides for buying things that are actually about specific like people or needs.
Exactly.
Like we did. Like, yeah.
As we all know, like the best gift is one that like, you know, demonstrates that you really truly understand the person receiving it,
right,
you know, and
right.
Like we don't have a guide for every single person in the world,
correct,
you know, right now, but we do, you know, for especially like with the chronic pain one, like,
yeah,
you know, there's a lot of empathy in that guide, and I, you know, it's, I think that's really what sort of like makes our guide package really special.
Yeah,
you know, is it like for the people that it does apply to, these are like, especially the bike guide, like the writer we had on that really knew what she was talking about, and these are real, these are gifts for like real cyclists. This is not like a, you know, like a poser gift guide, like, you know, we looked up what people were looking at on Amazon for bikes.
Yeah,
like, buy a water bottle.
Yeah
that's exactly.
Like that's like the gaming one was really good. We did like a kind of like ridiculous gaming gifts. Some of them are ridiculous, some of them are within reason, but you know, like stuff like we suggest, like the Prophecy gaming table, which is like a table for playing D&D if you're like really serious. Like that's really cool. Like we have a bunch of this. We have this crazy racing setup, which is like a race car.
Yes,
it's like €100,000 or yes. 100,000 pounds.
It's literally
or
an F1 car with no like guts in yeah. it that you just play racing.
It's so awesome. Well, I mean, but you know, these are, I like them. These are gifts that you just don't see. There's also weird shit. Like we have this like this haptic vest. Like I kind of want the haptic vest. I mean,
same.
The guys that drive me the most crazy are like the best notebooks, and it's like a Dell and an Apple notebook and the Surface, and it's like, okay, those are laptops you can buy, like that's true, like that's not really like a great gift in my opinion. Although I should say I did get Laura a new MacBook Air for Hanukkah, And but I mean,
what
she
color
really,
did you go with?
I got a gold. I got the gold. Okay. Well, it's funny because I was like, well, I bought one for myself, and I was like talking about how good it is, and she's been complaining about how her battery dies in like 20 minutes on her old MacBook Air. It's like literally she just is constantly walking around the house with a charger trying to like set it up somewhere. And you know, I was well, the new ones are coming out and they're supposed to be really good. And then I got one. I was like, these are really good. She's like, oh yeah, maybe Santa will get me one. I was like, oh fuck. Like I definitely should have bought her one. Although I wasn't sure that they were actually good. I bought one after Ray wrote about it. And I was like, okay, like I'm going to get one of these and see. But she was like,
I mean, at the time it was not exactly clear how it would shake out with the M1 chips, but it's,
I thought that they would be fast and good at a few specific things, but that it would be a nightmare for a year to 2 years, sort of like when the Intel switch exactly. happened, where it was just like software's not working and these weird plugins I use don't work, and if I do have to emulate something from like an old app, it's super slow and buggy, and now I
yes.
can't like
yes.
you know, and that didn't actually in practice, I have, you know, knock on wood, had I'll no tell bad experiences.
I'll
Everything
tell you
just
what,
works.
I'll tell you what actually was the main thing that led me to the purchase, which was that kind of pushed me over the edge was like somebody, maybe it was Ray, I can't remember who wrote that, like it was like, oh yeah, like I installed Dropbox, including its like Finder integration, and it works fine. And it's like, wait, so you're telling me that even the little weird stuff that runs in the background that is like literally not written for this chip will work? And I don't have to be like, oh, my workflow is now completely screwed up.
In some cases, they work faster than they did on the
yes,
old machines in
yes.
emulation.
Nuts. Yeah. Just nuts.
It is crazy how seamless it is to use. Like, it is not there. It is nothing like the last time Apple did this, the jump from PowerPC to x86. It's like that was you could tell you were running this weird emulation and a lot of stuff didn't work and it broke a lot of plugins and all this. It broke a lot of like not plugins, extensions as they were known. But like this is just like an absolute pleasure without any, to me, I've had no hitches whatsoever in the transition.
I snapped and got a new laptop when I realized that I was that browsing the internet or were doing work slacks or writing articles on my iPad was silent. It was cool to the touch. The battery lasted all day. It was just like a joy. And then when I brought out my like real computer with like a real chip in it and like a full operating system, it would be chugging along if I was in Slack. It was like chugging to do Google Docs, and it was hot, and it was like, I got to the point, you get an hour of battery life, where I was just like, it has to be better. Like, if it's running whatever this iPad is running, it has to be better. And it's yeah. been, it's a huge step up. And honestly, okay, so for this episode, I really wanted to talk about, this is a good segue, I really wanted to talk about, like, the year in review, like, the year of tech, and sort of, obviously, the coronavirus has like hung over all of tech and all of social media and all of the internet. It says it has hung over everything. But I do think there are some tech stories from this year that are landmark things that we're going to look back on. And some of them are obvious and some of them aren't. And I think this switch over to in chip architecture for Apple is a huge deal. This is a huge sea change moment in how computers are made, like how apps are distributed, because now you can run now games that run on the iPad and iPhone also run on the Mac. And like having a company that makes every part of their computer, like from the chips to the, like everything, but basically the displays, is a really big deal. And already Microsoft is taking steps to make its own ARM processors because they see the huge benefit of what Apple's been doing for decades, which is like custom designing the hardware and software to go together. And I think this is the moment where like we will begin to see the collapse of iOS and iPadOS into macOS, and sort of we're going to get what Apple is in the future because of this. And in some ways this was inevitable, and it should have been more obvious that this was about to happen even before the rumors started, because strategically This makes so much sense for Apple, and it's such a massive improvement for customers. And I think it's going to change the way that, you know, gadgets are made. Like,
yeah, I think that it is a big step. And I will say that I think for Apple, just in the apps, just to abstract them out from everything else, this is we're about to see the end of the this sort of the divide is going to be over pretty soon. And already you can run iPad apps and iPhone apps on the on the laptop. And I think that increasingly, like with all the pressure that's going on with about how these systems operate for users, I mean, we were talking about this in the last podcast about, you know, what you can run on your phone or your iPad. I think the challenge for Apple will, of course, to make it make sense that there are these, like, that there is the range of products of, from what I could tell, the only difference now between an iPad with a keyboard, like the keyboard attachment that I have, and the M1 MacBook that I have, is that Apple chose to put the more full-featured version of the operating system on the Mac. You know? That, like, there's nothing stopping the iPad from running that exact operating system in exactly the same way, or even some variant of it.
In fact, it would even have more features because it has a touchscreen.
Right. So now, like, to me, the question is, like, what's going on? Like, what are we doing here that you've got this weird, unnecessary... I mean, you have to tell me why you didn't put a touchscreen on this thing. I suppose they could say, well, ergonomically, we don't believe in it. But, you know, Apple's always like, that's for the birds. And then, like, 2 years later, they're like, we did it.
Well, so. Here's the thing. They could sell you a touchscreen that snaps into a beautiful keyboard case, and it all runs full Mac operating software, and you get the full experience. Or they could sell you two things. And right, they're exactly. very excited about exactly. the idea of exactly. selling you two things.
Right. So there's a big question there, you know, like what happens? I don't know. I think Microsoft has a different challenge now, which is they have failed so far to demonstrate that they could make the transition away from Intel to ARM. And
I tried this, by the way.
You tried what?
Yeah, so I have a Lenovo Windows on Snapdragon laptop using the Snapdragon 850. And when Microsoft very quietly, I believe on a Friday, late on a Friday, put out a blog post saying, we have updated our emulator to, you know, to work with 64-bit apps, which is what, you know, you couldn't even find 32-bit apps to run on it before. I had to run, like, to edit video on that laptop, I had to find a version of Sony Vegas from like 8 years ago that still had a 32-bit version, and you can imagine how great that was. So I tried this new 64-bit update that they have, and it's trash. You know what I mean? Like, it's like I can't even get DaVinci Resolve to run.
Right.
Because, like, one of the plugins right. is just not compatible.
Well, this is like,
you
the
know?
Surface X is not a... Yeah, it's like, well, it's a bad, slow computer. Like the yeah. difference between the Surface X, the promise, the idea was supposed to be like... The Surface Pro X, whatever the last one that I reviewed like a year ago or something, it was supposed to be like, okay, we now... It's like... a full-featured Windows laptop, but it's going to run for 10 hours battery, and it's ARM architecture. And it's like, it was like slow and shitty, and it didn't run all the apps, and you couldn't like install Dropbox. And I would say that like what happened with the M1 Mac is like the opposite experience, where it's like, it literally lived up to the Apple joke, which is it just works. It was everything just not only worked, but better than the other versions, right? And I think like, That Microsoft hasn't gotten there yet, and now has missed the opportunity. I don't know. Their architecture is not going to have a transition like we've seen.
Do
with
you
Apple.
Think that the problem is? I mean, go with me for a second. Mm. They have Windows, a version of Windows that runs on Xbox that is pretty lightweight. And a lot of the shit has been cut out of it. It just basically, it's an environment to run games. Yeah, to run DirectX games. Then you have like the Zune HD, which was a beautiful user interface. I mean, absolutely stunning Metro UI. Still to this day looks futuristic. It's like the song Toxic by Britney Spears. Every time you see it or hear it, you're like, damn, that's still really good. Like, that still works. It's modern. But was a failure. Then they go to Windows Mobile. That failed to take off for multiple reasons we don't have to get into. But all to say, Microsoft's most profitable and basically most well-maintained and longest supported piece of software is Windows. And Windows is huge. Windows, has so much legacy and compatibility and so many options and so many drivers and so many, like, it's just a clunky, we talked last week about how there are Microsoft developers and engineers who aren't sure how core functions of the operating system work because they weren't documented. And they just kind of work. And so they don't fuck around with it. And there's a lot of like spaghetti code happening. And I wonder if Apple having chopped their operating system shit off at the turn of the century and said, like, we're making OS X. It's completely different. We're like, you know, we'll, there'll be some legacy modes. Then switching to Intel, completely like had their operating system rewritten and ready to go. Did it again with the M1, but also did it for iOS and started bringing some of those cuts and streamlined features into the Mac operating system. So now they have a very smooth, tight operating system. And iOS and iPad OS are obviously very modern and very built from the ground up. And so their software can be perfectly tailored and developers know exactly who, what they're getting into. And also developers now know that the M1 is the future of the Mac, like all Macs will be M1. And so they can then target their software accordingly. Microsoft, who knows? I mean, if you're a developer, what's your incentive to go chase down the ARM thing?
That's the thing is that like within, you know, it's been like a month since the M1 like formal announcement or something like that. And already there's a pretty good deluge of software that's being, you know, cross compiled for the M1.
Yeah.
I mean, when like, there's Adobe betas for everything now, and like the
Chrome runs like a dream, which is the first time in my life I can say that.
There's an M1 version of Chrome. When I downloaded Chrome from my MacBook or my new MacBook, it was like, do you want the one for Apple's chip or do you want the one for the Intel chip?
Ooh. Right. So, well, here. They're already on. My point is that like the Windows on ARM initiative has been around for at least two CESs, and there's not shit. There's not. I couldn't even tell you.
Yes.
Like, there's a Firefox has an ARM version, but, you know.
I mean, this is the Windows 7, Windows 10 thing of, like, Windows 10 was supposed to have all these full screen apps, and, like, it was going to be a great tablet experience, and, like, I've literally never used any of that, ever. And I've had touchscreen Windows computers. I've just used regular Windows and dealt with it. And that...
Every time I launch the... like, one good example of this on Windows 10 is the built-in mail app that was for this, like... it's still in this, like, Metro idea from, you know?
Yeah.
A few years back. And it's just... There's, like... I couldn't describe to you how low information density is this is. Like, it is perfect.
It's very consumer. That actually, the thing that annoys me most about that app, you're talking about the Windows Mail app, right?
Yeah, just the regular Windows Mail app.
It's a fine, I mean, it is lacking some major features like aliases, but besides that, what actually annoys me about it, and this is true of what is their browser called now? Edge or whatever?
Yeah, Edge browser.
It uses some kind of like smoothing, like acceleration on like typing that and scrolling that other apps that are on Windows don't use, like third party apps. And it's like when you type in the mail app, it actually looks smoother and faster than when you type in like a Chrome window. And I don't understand why that is, but it's like I can feel that like Microsoft has given its own app some kind of special juice that other apps aren't getting. Have you ever noticed that? It's like really aggravating to me. Like,
well, it's part of what I was going to say. It's part of the huge inconsistencies across the operating system that I don't even know. Like, games are running in a completely different environment and in different ways than apps that you download from the Microsoft Store, which are also very different and not comparable to the apps that you sideload, which a lot of those are legacy. Like, it's all over the place. Not even, I mean, just the settings menu is all over the place, and the design makes no sense. And I don't know how Microsoft gets itself out of this other than a very, very, very painful period where they say, we have two operating systems, one for consumer products that you should buy, And this is it. And we're not selling a home version of Windows. And then one for back-end servers and stuff like that. But at some point...
I just don't know. Yeah, I mean, this is like we're going... In some ways, like I really like Windows. But in some ways, it feels like where Windows used to be, where everything was sort of brute force. Maybe it never really changed. Everything was just kind of brute force. They're like, well, we have computers that are fast enough now that we can just run all of these. Like, I mean, even installing an app on a... Even installing a program on your Windows computer can take so many forms. It's like, why is there not...
Is it an MSI? Is it an EXE?
Yeah, like... And what is like, it? And the dialogues look like they're from, like, Win95. Like, it's very odd. Like, why hasn't this just been, like, reined in? Like, you don't have to be Apple, but it just is... confusing at this point. You know, it's like, and it's because it's so disparate. I get it. It's sort of like they're a victim of their own success in the way that the disparate open nature of Windows has allowed lots of things to thrive. But now we're at a point where it's like, well, it ain't that, like, installing an app ain't that special.
Right.
You should have a way to do it on your, that's like a part of your core platform. Like, I should have be able to have a dialogue of installing and uninstalling things in one place only. Like in Windows, there are multiple places where you can have an install and uninstall, like, experience. There are apps there are programs that programs install that are just there for the express purpose of uninstalling the program. It's like, I think at this point, Windows would say, we're not allowing that anymore.
It's so difficult to know if a program is running that I still bring up the task manager and have to kill individual tasks.
Task manager is a constant friend.
The task manager is basically like the actual only source of truth on a Windows computer for what is happening. Line. You're like, that's essentially, the task manager is essentially how the computer, you see how the computer's operating. Otherwise,
you know what's crazy?
You're lost.
Is that like, and like you could make the argument that like that Windows is like the Isuzu truck. Like, it is just, you just need something heavy duty that can, you know, do all the, provide you all the utility that you need, right? It's not about user experience, it's all about utility. You know what I mean? Like, when I need to do like a very, when I need to flash a Samsung phone, the software only, like, the engineering software only works on Windows. But here's the difference between those two things, is that, like, with the Isuzu truck, like, all of this work that has gone into, like, the internal combustion engine, you know, like, it makes that, like, it is good technology. They have refined the internal combustion engine to the point where, you know, like, a big heavy truck like that can actually get somewhat decent gas mileage. And, like, it's all accrued into a very good product that provides a lot of utility, and that's just not the case. It was like, actually, imagine if that Isuzu truck was like the size of a house and you could still only haul like a refrigerator inside of it.
I think that's a very fair assessment of the situation. And by the way, this is, I love Windows, I love my PCs. I was playing Cyberpunk 2077 last night. And it was a wonderful dream experience. I mean, except for some...
PCs do amazing things. And frankly, there are stuff that PCs do that just... There literally is no way to do it with Linux or Mac. Like, there are specific things that I occasionally run into that I have to use a Windows computer. And when I use it, it works. And then I'm like, it's so frustrating that this shit doesn't work elsewhere. And obviously, you're given a lot of more freedom. But day to day, I can, in good conscience, recommend a Windows PC to almost anyone that asks me.
I think it's a specialty item for a specialty user.
Like, I would rather give most people a Chromebook.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, sure.
Today's podcast is brought to you by our partners at Genesis, who are celebrating the release of their first ever SUV, the Genesis GV80. No matter what road you choose to take this year, you'll want a vehicle that has you covered, from powerful engines and custom safety features to the types of unexpected luxuries that once you have, you'll wonder how you ever lived without. The GV80 is the full package, with available 375 horsepower and a 3.5-liter engine paired with an 8-speed automatic transmission. You get massive power out of this luxury SUV. Be the first to experience the new era of what a modern luxury SUV should be. Visit Genesis.com to learn more about the Genesis GV80. Boundless by design.
Well, what else happened this year? What else was like the big technology story?
Let's talk about what did happen, Ryan.
We can whinge about Windows forever.
There is the whole rise of working from home, telepresence sort of being forced to go mainstream. We're talking on Zoom right now, which became a product every single person knew about 2 months into the year that nobody had ever heard about. Zoom's got a lot of features. It's not like a user-friendly, like, it's no FaceTime. FaceTime, it pops up, you hit a button, there's a video call, it's done. Zoom, it comes with all of this stuff because we had so many problems, specific problems that needed to be solved.
I think Zoom is interesting because what it has made me, one of the things that's interesting about Zoom is that Zoom has turned us into, I feel like we've created an environment where a phone call, a audio-only experience would have been fine. We now feel compelled to make it a video call. Like, I've had calls that are one-on-one calls with people that should really be a phone call. But for some reason, they end up being on Zoom. And it's like, I think it's interesting how not only have we embraced the concept of video conferencing. I mean, here's the funny thing about video conferencing. It has been a running joke if you are in any type of job, any type of corporate job, that all the video conferencing solutions are awful and it's a horrible situation every time you're trying to get like a room full of people in an office somewhere and people remotely together to like talk to each other and show each other things.
Yeah, like pre-COVID, like in 2019, you know, like at previous jobs, it's like people are like circulating like blue jeans links and like
Skype.
You know, just
somebody FaceTimes you. Then you've got, you know, Uber conference. Like it was all over the place.
Yeah.
Totally. Now we're all using Zoom/FaceTime occasionally. But my grandparents now are intimately familiar with this piece of like corporate like telepresence software, Zoom, that they have never had to use because just through sheer necessity. And I think that push, even when we're able to go out and back into the world, I don't think there's like putting a genie back in the bottle. Like consumers have been fully educated through necessity. And they also now options are present in your head that never were. Like, I don't understand why I need to go to the doctor's office if I don't have a physical thing that needs to be looked at ever again. Like, why would I ever go to a doctor's office to be like, hi, my antidepressants are working. Can I have a new subscription? Can I have a new...
Ooh, subscription to antidepressants. Right?
No, just to Netflix.
As
they were like,
direct-to-consumer.
They were like, here's the thing. We're going to give you a Netflix subscription to cure your depression right away. No, like, why would I go be like, can I have a new prescription and then have to take the subway back to my office? Like, if anything, when the Bustle offices open back up, sorry to this man, but I can't see myself being there more than 3 days a week.
Well, I don't think you need to be. I actually think, I think I've seen our teams be more productive. I mean, I've been preaching this for a long time. I'm a big work from home supporter.
Josh. Like back at, that's the thing that I think is so interesting is that like when, you know, when we were starting The Verge, like I had never worked from home before. And it's, if you're not used, like all of us like here at Input, I think all of us have had like semi-remote work for the last 10 years.
In media, you know? There's a lot of freelancing and like, and if you work in TV, you work for 2 or 3 months really hardcore in an office, in a set. And then the rest of the year, you're at home just, like, answering emails.
But, like, in those first days, it was really hard. Because, like, you have an entire... Like, you need to be on top of your shit when it comes to time management. Like, you're in your home space. And, you know, when you're sort of trapped in your own apartment, it feels... What is time? Time is nothing.
Right.
Which means you need to, like, be on top of your shit. You know? It's really hard.
I mean, there's other huge downsides. Like, I feel like our companionship... the core Input team was... kidnapped and we spent a ton of time together, weekends, CES, like we became close very quickly, which it ended up being to our benefit because I think for a lot of people in other industries or a lot of people at other jobs who didn't necessarily weren't forced to go through that or whatever, I think it's hard to remember that there's human beings on the other side of the screen, that like people exist when they're not talking to you or interacting with you, that work is getting done just because you're not seeing it. I mean, there's a huge emotional shift that has to happen when you no longer have most of your senses to perceive other people. And I feel sometimes our team will get snippy with each other. And I have to remind myself, like, you know, we don't see each other. There's no like empathy here. We're just reading words in a Slack box and coming up with our own meanings and inflections and, you know, what's going on the other side. I don't know if somebody answered in 2 words because they were getting a package delivered and they just quickly wanted to help me out. Like there's no way to know and there's no bonding. And so there are huge downsides to this. But I think for people in industries like video game development or finance or things that like had crushing hours at the office, I mean, this is a chance to see your kids. And I think that that's also like, at the end of the day, that kind of like, I'll solve every other problem I need to solve for somebody if they get to spend more time with their family. And so,
well,
there was an NPR thing this morning that I was listening to about how, you know, there's this exodus from California, like Silicon Valley, people just, you know, wealthy people moving out of Silicon Valley and into, you know, like Washington State and Texas. And while it is true that those people are probably insufferable and those local the locals there will hate them, you know, it is good for local economies. You know, having a little bit of distribution where, you know, people bring some of that money out of San Francisco and into some of these, you know, more rural communities is probably going to be, I mean, there has actually been a few great migrations in the past in the United States, some of them for horrible, terrible reasons. But like economically, you know, actually movement between states was actually at an all-time low right before COVID.
Of course.
And so like that money was really trapped in San Francisco.
Well,
we can't have like a glorious city in the sky where all the rich tech people live.
It's
and
not
then
good.
The rest of us live in this underground garbage dump. Although I will say never leaving Manhattan.
I'm sorry. Having if you have the flexibility to move to a place where, say, the cost of living is way lower and you can afford a thing like a house and your kids can go to a better school or whatever the thing is, like, that is very positive. Now, unfortunately, we are not providing that opportunity to every person who is going through this pandemic. It's like there's a certain group of people who can move their, like, say, hey, I'm going to move my job online. And I can keep doing it. And those people have done very well. There's actually a lot of data out there right now that people in those ranks of your job has continued and has been able to move online and you're able to work from home, those people are doing better than ever. People on the other side are doing worse than ever. And it's like, obviously there are jobs that cannot be done from home. And, you know, without this turning into a many hours long podcast, this country does have a responsibility and an obligation to figure out a way to make it easier for those people to live and work, right? For anybody who doesn't have this kind of portability, right? And I think that, like, but I do think the portability of jobs now is a huge opportunity. It's an opportunity for new types of businesses. It's an opportunity for people to live in ways that are better for them and their families. I do think we might mourn for a little bit this, you know, there was this kind of gravitational pull of cities that was creating an increasingly, actually, I mean, when you think about cities, increasingly, obviously, diverse, with a diversity of ideas and people. And so I think, like,
for the most part, but I think, like, this remote working thing means that people who are disabled, who literally can't make it around Manhattan, can now have a job that used to previously be location gated.
Right. Well, also, I mean, it's driving down the cost of living in those places, in the cities, right? Because you've got real estate that has been freed up with people who are going elsewhere. I do think, like, I think the long term, I think we were always moving towards a more remote working lifestyle. I think that the internet has provided an enormous amounts of ways that we could be working remotely. And I think that, like, there are things that we do that we've always done that we're like, oh yeah, this is what we do. I mean, I wrote this thing about movie theaters a little while ago, you know, which is sort of a part of this, but like, I think movies, like the evolution of movie theaters will be interesting because I think like the occurrences and occasions to go to a movie will become maybe rarer and more special in a way. And it'll be less like, okay, this is just what we do now. And that'll change like the way we make movies and the way we build movie theaters and all kinds of stuff. But like,
there was no reason that I saw Hotel Transylvania 3 in a physical theater and I bought food and I took time out of my life. I did do that thing. But if it had been on Netflix, I probably would have watched it on Netflix.
That may be the single craziest thing you've ever told me since I've known you. You went to see Hotel Transylvania 3 in a theater?
Yeah, with kids.
Okay. I was going to say, it's a children's movie for sure.
But if you could watch that at home with Netflix and not have to get a million kids rounded up and pay for every single ticket, like, that's a big, that is what it should be. But theaters should exist because then, you know, I've had such moving movie experiences at like an Alamo Drafthouse.
But to your point, like, I agree. Like, but why should Hotel Transylvania have to be the number one movie in America for it to be in theaters is the other question.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? So maybe it's on fewer screens. It's got a shorter run. But like, if you want to go have that experience, you can still have it. But I think the idea that you're like, okay, guys, we spent $250 million on fucking Hotel Transylvania 3. And if it doesn't make $1 billion in the next 6 months, we're screwed. It's like, that's a crazy business that should not exist.
This thing I tweeted last night about
Hotel Transylvania 3.
No, it was about Croods, the new age, beating out Tenet on VOD, and it's like,
listen, oh, Zendaya is Michi.
Zendaya is Michi from the Croods?
It might be, or
no, that's some other movie. That's some other movie. That I think never came out.
Really?
Zendaya is Michi. Did it ever come out? What the fuck is the movie? No one knows.
The movie is Smallfoot.
Smallfoot. It's like a Bigfoot movie. It's about Bigfoot's son or something.
I think it's about Bigfoot. That's so funny.
I mean, remember they made a movie about talking cars? Do you know this? Do you remember they made a movie about like talking monster trucks? There was the idea of like the studio heads, like son had the idea. He was like, you should make a movie about talking monster trucks. And they spent like $200 million on it. And it was a massive bomb.
If Quibi tells us anything, it's just these people don't know what they're doing.
Hold on a second. I gotta find out what this movie is.
Yeah. I mean, the Quibi thing was also a big part of the year. And I think it was
it's called Monster Trucks is the name of the film.
The Quibi thing should be a warning shot through all of tech and media that number one, your business cannot exist on VC capital alone for all time.
Oh my God.
You're going to have to start making money. And also not everything is too big to fail. Cyberpunk and Quibi should tell people you can spend $1 billion on something and people can hate it.
Here's
and
a great
example. Won't necessarily make money.
Can I just read this Wikipedia entry? It's so good.
Yeah.
The film is called Monster Trucks. On July 31st, 2013, Paramount Animation announced they were developing a new live-action animated franchise with an entry film. This was going to be a franchise, okay? They were going to make this into fucking Avengers for kids, okay? Titled Monster Trucks, with some people said, whatever, who cares, write the film script. The pitch was created by Paramount's president, Adam Goodman, alongside his four-year-old son, okay? It cost $125 million to make.
Oh, my God, this movie.
And it made $64 million total at the box office, and they had to take a $115 million write-down because it performed so poorly.
Okay? Wow, this is some, 1997 concept shit.
And now this fucking kid, poor Adam Goodman's son, has to live with this shit hanging over his head for the rest of his life.
When he goes in for his job at McKinsey, they're like, ooh, you remember when you were 10 and you made that really bad call in the movie?
It's looking good. The resume looks good, but you've got a history of incredible failures.
Huge losses.
Your credit is just shredded.
Anyhow, but this is my fucking point, okay? That Adam Goodman was like, well, my kid could probably come up with an idea. Let's spend $125 million on the monster truck thing, and we'll turn it into the Avengers, and it'll make us billions and billions of dollars. Like, dude, maybe you should have made a smaller film for less money to see if people wanted that instead of deciding that this was you had to do this. This is the problem with filming. This is why, no offense, I mean, the Avengers movies are all, to some degree fun, but do we need all of them? Does the Ant-Man movie really add that much to our lives?
Do we need all of them to have blockbuster film premieres is my
right.
question.
Yeah, they all
you
want to
put it all on
movies.
Disney Plus, go for it.
I mean, you could have made a Batman. By the way, the other thing is it does is they're like, okay, well, the Iron Man movies have all made billions of dollars. The next Batman movie has to make $1 billion
or else it's not
successful. And then so you end up with Zack Snyder going like,
that changes the characters too, because Batman is also a character that has been through lots of weird iterations, and some of the smaller, more subtle projects ended up being their most successful.
Absolutely.
Batman animated series. And now it has to be Jared Leto and Robert Pattinson and Ben Affleck in a movie about how cool and gritty and real it is with explosions and a hot chick who also is a feminist.
So this is one of my favorite. Actually brings us to talking about trends for 2021 and beyond. This is one of my favorite things that's happening right now, which is the idea. So we started watching The Stand. I don't know if anybody else has watched it. And I know it's had mixed reviews. The Stand is based, of course, on the Stephen King book about a flu-like pandemic that wipes out all life, most life on the planet.
Heard of it.
Very ripped from the headlines. And I'm like, the book is 1,100 pages long. It's a very long book. I listened to it on audio. It was I spent several months listening to it. It's a book, an audio book. But the thing that's interesting is that they made it is also, by the way, the movie It The book is a, like 1,100 page or 1,200 page book. They made it into two movies. I think it was a failure. Maybe you guys enjoyed it, but if you've read the book, it was a failure of execution that could have been a really great limited series, like 10 episodes or even like two seasons of something that where you really got to dig into these super interesting characters and all this crazy backstory.
Perfect example.
Yeah.
The Mandalorian is a huge artistic critical success. And guess what wasn't? Most of those Star Wars movies that they trotted out.
Exactly. And this to me is what's so interesting is that we are starting to shift. We have believed for so long that like, oh, you make a movie, it's 2 hours long, it's a weekend, it's, it comes out on Christmas weekend or whatever, it's a big blockbuster.
The big
release. The big release, and that's how you do it. And it's like, maybe actually now we can start to think about better ways to get those stories to people and to tell those stories. And like, it doesn't have to be this thing. Like, we can change the entire fabric of what we think this is supposed to be like. Like, you think you're supposed to have like the billion-dollar movie because we built a system up based on shit from like basically the 1950s, you know, or the 1940s with how we made movies. And it's like, I think like now that entertainment is where it's at, you can make the kinds of TV shows you can make. I mean, to call them TV shows is not even the right way to describe them. They're like serialized movies, most of these things.
Absolutely.
I mean, the Mandalorian is as good as any Star Wars movie that has come out in the last 20 years, better in some ways. It has the production value and the character development that those movies have, and then some, right? But like,
and frankly, specificity, smaller scale, character driven, like things that have something to say or that are weird to me are way better than these super. I mean, and I enjoy a blockbuster thing, but I think. I would rather lots of weird Batman one-shots than another Batman v Superman for the rest of my life.
That's
period.
The crazy thing about these superhero movies is that like they have really, really bad stakes creep, right?
Yeah,
and so,
of
like,
course.
They're, every single one is just like, well, this thing is going to, like, Thanos
I always
destroyed
call it super
the
inflation.
Universe.
Right. Everybody's powers become like cataclysmic reality-bending powers.
And like in The Mandalorian, you have a classic father-son adventure series. The stakes are not that high, and it really is a joy. There's flaws. There actually are huge flaws in The Mandalorian, but it is just, it's really great to watch. And
yeah,
it
but
really
comparative
goes back to that. Yeah.
But it's also doesn't.
If everybody likes you, you've said nothing. It's my opinion.
It's just like, and I think that the idea of, I mean, I just think that it's just, there's so much more you can do in the, imagine if Game of Thrones, now I know that Game of Thrones final season was a complete shit show, but I mean, everybody was enjoying the hell out of it up until the final season. Imagine if they had tried to do Game of Thrones as a series of movies. Like, think about how few things there would have been to dig into.
I mean, it's like the Harry Potter thing. The Harry Potter movies are cute and whatever. But
well,
if you really wanted to
YA books, I mean, they're short, you know.
But if you really wanted to do that series and the world building and all of that stuff justice in a way where you didn't need to read the book to enjoy the movie, you could have done an HBO series where each school year was 10 episodes and you got lots of those little stories that happen in the books, and you could do a lot of world building. And obviously you would, you know, all of this takes place in a universe where J.K. Rowling isn't a huge transphobe and a horrible person. That I feel like that's a better way to tell that story. And I think that The Mandalorian is proof that, like, I also think most comic book characters benefit from Monsters of the Week, Buffy style, in a TV series, rather than every single movie needing to be a team up against a cataclysmic galactic threat.
I mean, it is, I will say, I mean, I think about this all the time. This is exactly what I was saying with The Stand, which is like, I read that book and I was like, this is fucking great. And if they had tried, and they did make it into like a mini series that was, you know, this is from the 80s. So it's like the quality of what they could do was just not there. But like, at least they didn't try to make it into a movie. You try to cram a 1,000-page book into a movie, you're just going to lose so much of what makes it entertaining and interesting. And I think like the expansiveness of the worlds that we are, that we are now like adapting are just like, I think comic books are a great example. I'm sorry, but like, I think that a Batman series would allow us to explore much more of the things that all of the Batman movies are attempting to explore in these films that you only get like a glimpse of, you know.
How many amazing characters came out of Batman single episode or single issue or single arcs? Like, Harley Quinn was a one episode person and then became a two episode person. And now is the most valuable property DC has is Harley Quinn. And she came out of an animated TV show from one episode because people took a chance.
Just imagine the arc of a Batman series that took on like Batman going from like a lone wolf to his relationship with Robin, to taking on Robin as a partner and as a son, and then Robin being killed in Death in the Family by the Joker. Spoiler alert. I mean, you could obviously would change some of this, but just imagine how many amazing seasons of television you could create with those big arcs of characters and the type of like in-depth like drama and emotion and action you could fucking get into versus like Ben Affleck and what's his name with the mustache fighting for 2 hours in a movie, which seems like Henry Cavill. Thank you. You're airdropped into these characters you know nothing about. You're given no reason to actually give a shit about anything unless you're like paying them, you know, it's just pure like fandom. And then
Batman is like, this guy seems like a douche.
My kingdom for a Buffy/Veronica Mars style Batgirl TV show where college,
so
and she's got to solve things with detective work, and like occasionally she runs into the big superheroes.
Yeah, you remember that one part about Batman also being kind of like a detective that we never get to see?
Yeah, right. Oh my god, you could do a whole season. You could literally just do a whole season of a Batman series where it's not even like it's just him trying to solve you could take like the Long Halloween and turn that into a season where it's him trying to solve like a serial killer like crime, and it's like that you could have a whole separate thing going on that isn't even like, oh, Batman's just like beating people up everywhere he goes, you know, or like check out Batman's cool gadgets or whatever. I just think the opportunity is so huge. And we've gotten there a little bit. I didn't really love the Legion show, but a lot of people did. And I think it at least tried to do something new with like.
Yeah, and Jessica Jones had a great first season.
And
I'm looking forward to She-Hulk.
I watched the first like season and a half of Preacher. I don't know why I stopped, but Preacher did a really interesting. The Boys is a great example.
Oh my god, so good.
Of a total like
Watchmen.
Really dig in. Yes, watch the Watchmen series.
Was crazy. That's
yeah,
true.
I mean, and so I think this actually is exactly the point. Talking about this whole shift of how we live, like. I do think, yes, people are going to be, when we get into 2021 and everybody has their vaccinations and we can actually go out in public again, it's going to be, people are going to be desperate to go do things together, like go see movies and go to concerts and all that stuff. But I also think some of these things aren't just, well, we had to change what we were doing because of the pandemic. I think some of them will have longer lasting impact. And I hope that one of them is that we start to reconsider, I think this goes for like the work thing as much as our entertainment. It's like that we reconsider where the value really is and start to shift, like just change the value proposition for a lot of the things that are on offer. I think it's also like for people working, I think like why is it necessary to bring every single writer and editor just for us? Like take us for an example. I get it. If you want to go work in an office, that's great. And you feel like maybe you don't have space at home or maybe you need to just get out of the house. Totally. There's totally a reason for that. There are a lot of people who are like, you know what? I'll say I'm one of the people who, I love the fact that I can still pull like a long day and then turn around and go have dinner with Zelda and I don't have to commute. You know, I love the fact that like we can get on it for like an early call and it's like you can immediately be there without having to worry about like, oh, you're late because you were finding a parking space or like your train got held up or whatever.
Taking that
stress out of the day is actually a huge, like allows me to be better at my job, in my opinion, you know.
My dad is, you know, about to be 60. And he has had two hip replacements, or a hip replacement and an updated hip replacement. And he has to spend 2 hours a day in the car. And it gives him a lot of pain. You know what I mean? Like
yeah.
sitting in
oh,
the, I mean, and he has
sit.
A nice,
yeah.
you know, he has a nice car now that is, you know, he bought it specifically because it has really nice seats. But he spends 2 hours every day commuting with a hip replacement. And it's just
yeah.
like.
That's crazy. It's like, yeah, I mean, to your point, it's like. Does everybody? That's also good for like the world. Like if we have fewer people commuting, fewer
yes.
people driving in cars, you know, fewer people like wasting resources that could otherwise be freed up. I mean, like there's so much. Like when you think about just like food waste, for instance, like people going into huge cities and everybody getting like takeout or whatever. It's a huge amount of food waste, right? Just like the food itself, the packaging, I think you just gave me meme PTSD.
I saw a tweet. Someone was like, "Oh, this like apple orchard in like Holland, like you know, had a lot of extra apples, and they like tied them to their fence for everyone else to have because they didn't want to go bad." And somebody just replied, "It was just like in America, we just throw that away.
Absolutely,
we destroy that because you know we would just be markets.
Like we do whatever they did to those what were the things they killed the animals that
oh the minks the, oh god
the minks we
oh,
would do we would do to the apples what they did to the
absolutely
mink.
And we did. I know we want to probably wrap up soon, but like yeah. there was one other huge thing that happened in 2020 that I'm curious about how you guys feel will you know evolve in 2021, which is I feel like everybody sort of coalesced around saying fuck you big tech. Everyone was like actually
yeah.
you guys are the worst.
This topic worst. I didn't think we would get to, but I it was on the list just in case, was we were living in a world where we were very quickly approaching a $2,000 iPhone and a $1,000 gaming console. We're very quickly, I mean, games now cost minimum $70 for the PlayStation 5. And we were hurtling towards, I mean, the amount of subscription services that I pay for, like, it's shocking. And I think that this year, not only does everyone's finances not allow for that, and so things like Stadia or the Xbox Series X on, like, a financing plan with free Game Pass are much more attractive options, I also think it was a year for all of us to check in and be like, hey, when Google went down for 2 hours and we were all working from home, like, the whole world stopped for 2 hours, and that's probably not great. And, like, I think that's a good way. It's been a wake-up moment for us to look at Facebook and be like, the amount of misinformation about Black Lives Matter and the pandemic and the election all in 1 year, we can look at it objectively and say this company has to be broken up. Like, this cannot, this is unsustainable.
Something has to be done.
I mean, look at the amount of wealth Jeff Bezos alone has accrued while there are starving children in this country right now. Like,
it's crazy.
Almost as much money as everybody else lost.
I think the thing that's most, I agree that this is definitely the year that people were like, wait a second, this shit actually sucks. But it's also like, it's the year where we started to have some conversations about solving it that felt like they rose to a level that was more real than it's ever been. And like, now that the Biden-Harris administration is going in and there are people there who actually know what the hell they're doing and are like have thought about these problems and right. there are people
not
like,
solely motivated by personal greed.
Yes, exactly. I mean, somewhat, of course, always motivated by personal greed, but
right,
then
but
maybe some other stuff. Like, you could still be greedy and also have like ideas that
some
aren't
scruples.
Complete garbage, you know. Maybe this will start to happen, that we actually see regulation and we see some tempering of this stuff. But it is like the inequality. I think one of the things that is that these companies don't seem to be able to project or understand is like, you actually could be very abusive to everybody if you were more generous. Like, if you were more generous to your employees and more generous to the people who use your products. If Jeff Bezos was like, you know what, I made $83 billion in worth or whatever, and I'm going to give half of that right now to like feeding Americans. Like, I don't need all of this.
Paid Amazon employees $30 an hour with health benefits, he would get away with all of it. And he
would be
a trillionaire faster.
What's weird is it's like, I get you want to be as rich as possible, but you know, with like being just a little bit less rich, you would, a lot of people would like kind of chill out. Like, because what's the inequality is the thing that it's like, not only are you destroying, you know, Amazon is like, has destroyed so many businesses and has fucked up commerce in America in so many ways and is so like wildly in control of like our lives in like the ways that we shop and in the ways that the mail system works and the, you know, the ways that they can kind of manipulate prices. But it's like, but they give, it's like, they also feel it feels like they're giving nothing back ever. Right.
Remember when Jeff Bezos tried to trick governors all across the country into giving him a huge fucking tax break?
Yeah.
On
and it's like
HQ2 they
already,
or whatever.
They already have huge tax breaks on before
just,
that.
Yeah.
I mean, actually, Amazon, in many ways, Amazon is its own beast, right? Because it's not just like a service that operates stuff on the internet. It is like a service that has a real world both utility and impact, right? In the sense of like, they can affect businesses and they can affect like users, consumers in a way that Apple can. It's like, okay, yeah, but like, I don't need to get like, I'm not getting goods the daily goods from Apple. Well, right? Apple, like, it's not like a debate between me going to CVS to get batteries or ordering them from Amazon. That's a real thing that happens with people, you know?
Right. Well, Apple is actually like, you know, I don't own any Apple products. I have some like fundamental disagreements about the way they create their products. But like the technology advances that get into the high end, Apple does bring them. You know, like people at the very lowest end of the iPhone totem pole do actually get a lot of utility from that iPhone. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like, you know, their products are, you know, I do also think that there's some class issues going on with Apple, but like, you know, the lineup is pretty good. And I think
they introduced $549 headphones. Let's just say what it is.
Yes, that's true. But I mean, to your point, Josh, about the inequality is that like this inequality is starting to leach into, you know, not just like the board level decisions that are going on at these companies, but they're starting to leach into like the actual consumer products themselves. Ryan, to your point about the $500 headphones, it's like, what the fuck is that?
Yeah. The bad $500 headphones.
Yeah.
Well, some of these businesses only work at scale. Like the PS5 only works as a business model or a product if most people can spend $600 on a game console. And right now that's like not
That's crazy.
The case.
That's crazy. People are starving. Like literally they can't get enough food. Like food, I was listening to this Washington Post thing last night. Like food pantry services are up like 40% in the United States.
Well,
I mean,
let's talk about something on a lighter note.
Oh, true.
Wow. Hard.
And wrap this up, please.
Yeah, we got to wrap it up.
That's true.
We're going into a holiday here. We're going
we could
into
spiral into the worst things that are happening right now, and we have and we will, but we can't do it right now.
Hold on. I will say this. I will say, I believe 2021 is going to be a year of a lot of talk about regulation with very little action. Yeah, let's you want to move on to nice things.
Tell me the nicest thing from your year, and then let's get out of here.
Oh my god, from the year?
Yeah, what's a nice thing about the silver lining of 2020, the worst year ever?
Okay, do you want me to start? Who's starting?
I'll start. Okay. My silver lining has been two things. One is spending more time with my husband. We got married this year. We did not have a honeymoon. We immediately went into lockdown and have been quarantined together for the length of our marriage. And I like him more now, and I got to spend more time with him, and I'm happy. I you know, it sucks that this happened, but it's also a really great to know that in the worst circumstances, we grew closer together, and like it's clarified a lot of other relationships that I have, but this one the most of all. And then the other nice thing from the year is ray tracing. God, it's so pretty. That's it.
Who do you want me to go next?
Yes.
Okay. My silver lining, I talked about this before, and I will talk about it again. And I will talk about it forever. My silver lining, which has almost made the pandemic good, is that I've gotten to hang with Zelda and Laura more than I have in years and years, because I haven't had to do that commuting stuff, and I haven't had to be, you know, pulled away all the time and traveling and stuff. And like, it has been great. It has been, I mean, hard, really hard, but I'm lucky that Zelda's, you know, she goes to a school here. They opened up about as early as I think anything could to let kids go back to school, which was great. But like, also, you know, I've spent so much time being away that it's like we never had normal, like, okay, we're going to have like a family dinner. Like, I was always home after dinner. I often would get home after Zelda was in bed. And so like, I'd see her for a little bit in the morning and that would be it until the weekend. And like, I've had so much more time to hang out with her and to do things with her. And it has been like, I know it has been certainly really hard, and certainly it has been harder on other people than it's been on us. But I think that, you know, I think that it really has been like just a kind of amazing opportunity to see, like, you know, Zelda, especially Zelda. Obviously Laura and I have known each other longer, you know, but Zelda's growing up. And so I've gotten to spend time with her and gotten to spend time with our, you know, with our little family unit, and like not had to feel that stress of like, oh shit, like I'm not going to be home for dinner and I'm not going to be home for bed. And so that's been really good. I am like we're definitely stir crazy at this point, but it has been really, yeah. I mean, that part of it has been a real silver lining in my opinion.
Well, my partner is a doctor in residency, so I don't get to see him as much as I would like. Although we do make it work, though. I thought it would be worse than this when we got into it, but I do think that one of the, I mean, just materially, this this year has been really great because we got a new apartment and the mass exodus of people from New York allowed us to get a 2-bedroom apartment instead of a 1-bedroom or a studio. And that has allowed me to do a lot of like really great projects this year. Like I made my own electric bike. I taught myself how to sew and like use a sewing machine. And right now I'm in the middle of building like a, you know, like a 14-kilowatt power wall. And, you know, those are the things that really, like, I live for those projects. And so, like, there has been some silver linings here that have been pretty good.
2020 said Cybertruck and Evan said Powerwall.
That's right.
And you have how many, like, scooter batteries there right now?
I have 32 scooter batteries that I am in the process of refurbishing.
Okay. That's insane. Just such an insane project. And you're truly the only person I know who could embark on such a wild mission. But you see, I guarantee you, if this was a year where you could just go and do anything, that project would probably not be happening.
Exactly. Exactly.
You'd have a life.
Yeah.
You'd be able to go out and see people. Well, and like go to dinner and shit.
Maybe one day we shall have a life again.
Oh my God. I can't wait. I am going to go to so many social events. I'm going to personally start a new coronavirus that's even more deadly.
Like in my 20s, I didn't go to shows for various reasons, but like I'm going to be that guy who's like crushing a beer can on his head at a music festival.
I definitely am looking for. I don't even really like social gatherings, but I am definitely looking forward to like. I mean, to me, the big thing is like I miss diners. I'm like, I want to go to a diner so bad. Anyhow, that's it.
Well,
I'm done.
2020. Sayonara and to Tony.
Is this our last episode? Is this our last episode before the end of the year?
Yeah. To all the Tonys out there, I want to say happy holidays.
Oh my God.
Goddamn motherfucking New Year. Mm-hmm. I will see you. We will see you in the new year, but let's get hyped for a new inauguration and a new fresh start with a vaccine and hopefully a lighter, funner tomorrow.
Wow. I think there's nothing else to say. Let's get out of here.
Fuck Trump.
I was going to say that.
Yes.
Good. Fuck Trump. Well, that is our show for this week. We'll be back in 2021 with more tomorrow. And as always, I wish you and your family the very best, which they are going to get under a Biden-Harris administration, which gives them everything they want, when they want it, and where they want it, most importantly. God bless America.